A lovely voice.
Now, to start off with, let me tell you what we're talking about. We're talking about social justice, and this is part two. And you may remember that last time I spoke about it, about a month ago, I left you with a question, which was, are you willing to be foolish and offensive? Because that was Jesus's approach to social justice. He asked people to do things that seemed to be completely useless. So that was pretty foolish. And he cut across social barriers in a way which just about everybody found offensive. So are we prepared to be foolish and offensive and model ourselves on the way in which Jesus approached this topic? So that's the introduction. Now, to help me get going, I need, first of all, I need two men, and they need to be as mean and ugly as possible. Lawrence, I'll be you.
Oh, blimey.
And Matt, would you like to come and join me?
That wasn't a question, was it?
So much choice there. Yes.
Now, here we have what's called the rumble in the jungle.
We're rumbling in the jungle.
George Foreman. Muhammad Ali, yay! And you're about to kick off, and I'd like you to take the stance that you would take as you were about to start boxing. Right, excellent. Now, secondly, I need an adorable but experienced mother, and I can think of no one better than my own wife, so here comes Charlotte.
You obviously believe in forgiveness.
Don't you hurt my son.
And I also need somebody who, at heart, is a wild and free child.
That'd be me.
That might be Lynn, I think. Now, what we have here is a child on gap year, gone wandering off around the world.
Never come home.
About to come home through Terminal 5 at Heathrow. And here we have the adoring mother waiting for the returning child, not quite sure what to expect.
Yeah, we've done that. We've done that.
So if you'd like to take your stance, and if you'd like to take your stance, these are the two approaches to life. You can be ready for a fight, or you can be ready for love. Now, this one's fairly predictable. You know what's going to happen. There's going to be a fight and someone's going to get knocked out. This one is much more uncertain, and I can speak from personal experience because I've had 5 children go off on gap years, and you're never quite sure what's going to come back.
That's right.
We've had one son come back with bright orange hair, another one with a foot hanging off. We've had one come back looking very, very sheepish with a girlfriend 2 years older. You're never quite sure what's going to come back. But what you can be sure of is that this wonderful mother will love whatever turns up.
Whether they want it or not.
So these are the two approaches to life. Thank you, my excellent helpers. Right. You may now sit down. So what is your stance? Are you poised to fight, or are you poised to love? And I'd like to start by looking at 2 chapters in Scripture, Luke chapter 12, starting at verse 13. Would somebody like to read Luke 12, verses 13 to 15?
Said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." Jesus replied, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you?" And then he said to them, "Watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions."
Thank you. So here we have a picture of 2 brothers. The older one has inherited the father's estate, and the younger one is claiming his right to half the inheritance. Only the older brother doesn't seem to want to give up. So we have a legal dispute, and they bring it to Jesus for him to resolve. Now, do you think Jesus cares about people complying with legal obligations? Yes, of course he does. There's lots and lots and lots of stuff in the Bible about keeping your word, honouring your debts, doing what's expected of you. If we didn't pay any attention to legal rights, as a society we would be in deep trouble, and it's those sorts of rights that kind of keep us on the edge of justice all the time. And yet Jesus takes a different approach here and does something else. So Jesus cares about justice, but he does an extraordinary thing. He judges the motive of the person asking for justice. He judges the motive of the younger brother. And I think this is a great lesson for us as we think about, you know, what is just for me? What are my rights? How is my neighbor annoying me? What rights do I have against X, Y, or Z? Jesus asks us to consider our motives. Are we really fighting because actually we want more wealth? Is that what we're really after? Are we fighting for justice because our pride has been wounded? Are we fighting for justice for someone else because we think that that gives significance to us when we fight for someone else? All of these questions are questions I think that Jesus brings to our minds. Jesus judges the cause of our justice. There's a great verse in Habakkuk chapter 1, verse 7. And Habakkuk is describing a chaotic society. And there's a verse that talks about justice proceeding from themselves. In other words, people are deciding for themselves what justice looks like. And Habakkuk uses this as a picture of chaos. And I think that too speaks to our current generation, doesn't it? If a victim decides what the just outcome is, then I can promise you, you have chaos. That's why we have courts, to kind of arbitrate disputes and decide what a fair result is. If a victim decides what justice looks like, we have trouble. But I think for me, the most important lesson from this little passage is, particularly as we read on into kind of what happens next, and we have a long story about people storing up money in barns, which I'm sure you are familiar with. The point Jesus is really making is that he's elevating relationships above rights. It's not that rights are not important, but relationships, first of all, of course, with God, and secondly, with our neighbour. Relationships are more important than rights. Okay, the second passage we're going to look at is Luke chapter 18. If you want to flick to that, if you have your Bibles. Now, Luke chapter 18, verse 35, down to chapter 19, verse 10. Chapter 18, verse 35, down to 19, verse 10. Now, the way, unfortunately, that the Bible has got divided, we have a great big number 19 in the middle of there that splits these two stories. But actually, these two stories are meant to be read together. Jesus is walking to Jericho, and he sees a blind beggar. That's the first story. And the second story is the story of Zacchaeus. Would somebody like to read this? So, verse 35 down to verse 10.
As he drew near to Jericho, a blind man was sitting by the roadside begging. And hearing a crowd going by, he inquired what this meant. They told him, "Jesus of Nazareth is passing by." And he cried out, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." And those who were in front rebuked him, telling him to be silent. But he cried out all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." And Jesus stopped and commanded him to be brought to him. And when he came near, he asked him, "What do you want me to do for you?" He said, "Lord, let me recover my sight." And Jesus said to him, "Recover your sight. Your faith has made you well." And immediately he recovered his sight and followed him, glorifying God. And all the people, when they saw it, gave praise to God. He entered Jericho and was passing through. And behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was rich. And he was seeking to see who Jesus was. But on account of the crowd, he could not, because he was small in stature. So he ran on ahead and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was about to pass that way. And when Jesus came to that place, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today. So he hurried and came down and received him joyfully. And when they saw it, they all grumbled, he has gone in to be the guest of a man who is a sinner. And Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor. And if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I restore it fourfold. And Jesus said to him, today salvation has come to this house, since he also is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost.
Thank you. Now it's important to read these two stories together, because what we have is the story of the oppressed and the story of the oppressor. So the blind man is the person at the bottom of the heap. He is being oppressed. And Zacchaeus is at the top of the tree, one of the people responsible for oppression. And one of the really interesting things about this is it's written by Luke, and there is no gospel writer more interested in the cause of the poor than Luke. So when Luke gets into something like this, it's really helpful, I think, to pay attention. So the blind man is a victim in all sorts of ways. He's the victim of religious exclusion. He's socially excluded. No one wants to deal with him. And he's subject to economic injustice. He's not part of the economy of the society in which he lives. He is shut out, almost without hope. It's interesting, the crowd, who you might think would have compassion on him, they tell him to shut up in no uncertain terms. You can feel the hostility that the crowd has towards this man. And that tells us that there is something slightly twisted, something wrong going on here. One of the things that's going wrong is that the crowd actually liked to have beggars. Because when you have somebody who is weaker and poorer and more in need than you, you can show how merciful you are by blessing them, by giving them money. So beggars provided a kind of almost a religious service to the people of the time, in that they provided an outlet for people to show how gracious and how generous and how charitable they were. And I hope that's beginning to sound slightly twisted to you. The crowd isn't really interested in him as a victim at all. They don't want to listen to him. They actually don't want to have a conversation. They don't want to know what his problem is. They don't want a relationship. They only see him as an object of compassion. And that compassion only takes one form. It sees a material need, and it does something towards meeting that material need. Now, I wonder if you can hear echoes of that sometimes in the way perhaps in which we might give money to a charity that is doing wonderful work around the world or in slums or some difficult area. Do we sometimes actually not really want a relationship? Are we not really interested in what is actually their need and what they need? Do we think their needs are really just material? All they need is housing and shelter and a bit of cash? Or are we prepared to listen to what their needs really are? Now, the blind man is really unusual in the Gospels in that he calls Jesus the Son of David. And that only occurs in one other place, where I think it's the Canaanite woman, interestingly, calls him the Son of David. And I think this is a marker that there is something spiritual going on that is below the surface. Jesus and the blind man see the real cause of this blind man's problem. It's not about material need. It's not about Jesus asking the disciples to share their wealth, the money they have in their pockets, with this blind man. That's not what Jesus does. He sees his real need, which is a need for salvation, and salvation and healing, very much the same thing. So Jesus heals his blindness, and that's a physical manifestation of a spiritual reality, that this man needs salvation. That is the way to cure this man's problem. So Jesus sees the victim, he engages with him, he listens to his need as expressed by him, not as expressed by Jesus. They both see what the problem is, and Jesus resolves the problem. So we move from the oppressed, the victim, we move to Zacchaeus, the oppressor. And I guess Zacchaeus is the kind of modern day, or the ancient equivalent of the capitalist financier. You know, he is running the economy with others. He is running the economy of Israel at the time. The crowd hate him. That's why he runs ahead and hides up a tree, because he can't be part of the crowd. If he's part of the crowd, he's likely to get stabbed in the back because they hate him. That's why he disappears off down the road and climbs up a tree so the crowd can't get at him. And what does Jesus do with him? I think it's interesting what he does not do. He doesn't wag a finger at him. He doesn't condone the oppressive system that he's in. But he doesn't condemn the oppressor. He walks this really interesting line between not being pleased about what he's doing, but loving the man. There's no kind of cancel culture here. Jesus is prepared to associate with this man. So Jesus doesn't actually engage with Zacchaeus in any of the ways that we might expect. In fact, Jesus makes himself vulnerable to Zacchaeus. He asks Zacchaeus to help him, not the other way around. Jesus doesn't come and say, I've got the answer to your problems. I know what's wrong with you. This is what you need to do to sort out your life and sort out the economy of Israel. That isn't what Jesus does at all. Jesus comes to Zacchaeus and says, will you use your power to help me? I am in need, is what Jesus says. I need somewhere to stay, somewhere to eat. Will you help me? This is absolute genius, because what Jesus is doing is he's diverting Zacchaeus's power, ability, influence from bad to good. He's not taking away Zacchaeus's power. He's not dismantling institutional structures. He's not saying power is of the enemy. He's recognizing the reality of the situation and transferring, moving, shifting what Zacchaeus can do from bad to good. And what's even more interesting is he doesn't even tell Zacchaeus how to do it. He lets Zacchaeus realize the truth for himself. And that is, again, such a genius of the way in which Jesus deals with us. He deals with us so gently and helps us to learn ourselves rather than imposing from the outside. So what does Jesus do? He restores Zacchaeus' relationship with himself and obviously, therefore, with God. In the process, he shifts the anger of the crowd from Zacchaeus to himself. And this is why Jesus sometimes appears so offensive. The crowd at the end of this story, not like with a blind man when they start praising God, at the end of this story, the crowd is angry with Jesus. So Jesus has absorbed into himself some of the anger of the crowd at the oppressor and said, now I am prepared to sit and eat with the oppressor and help them realize for themselves how to change. And Zacchaeus makes this extraordinary promise about the wealth that he is going to restore to his community. And it seems likely, given the amount that he's promising to give away, that actually this is going to take the whole of Zacchaeus's life. It's going to take a long time for Zacchaeus to unwind what Zacchaeus has done and learn perhaps to be a tax collector in a better way. I think this is a great example of how Jesus encourages us, not always, but often, to change systems from the inside and not from the outside. Because that is actually how he changes us. He changes us from the inside, not by wagging a finger at us and making us change. He doesn't force us to change. He encourages us to change from within. So I'd like to go back to my two wonderful acting scenarios here. As we approach the topic of social justice, are we prepared to adopt Jesus's rather foolish and sometimes offensive means? Foolish in the sense of giving up rights in order to have relationships, and offensive in terms of going cross-culturally against culture in order to stand with people in need. Are we prepared to listen to victims rather than just assume that we know what the answer is? Are we prepared to love our enemy in order to encourage our enemy to decide for himself to change towards good? These seem to me to be some of the challenges that come out of this passage. So are we going to approach life as a fighter for social justice, or are we going to approach life like my wonderful wife, as ready to embrace and love whatever comes at us? Thank you.
Jamie, thank you.